one day, you see, okay, I'll tell you about my strange attitude in life. I considered myself when I came to Baba as a real good man, young man. I considered myself to be so, and I was proud about it. Pride is not a good thing, my dear, later on I heard. But I was, and I felt myself that I was really good. There were no occasions for me to tell lies, no occasions for me to have any grudge on others, anything. Everything was fine and smooth sailing before Baba called me to him. It was real good life. Had he not called me, summoned me. You know, when you get a summons, you have to attend the court, isn't it? You can't escape that once you receive it. So I was summoned, so I had to come. And I came as a young man, you see, of 20, 21. I was very happy about it and all that. With the passage of time, within 6 months or a year like that, gradually my lifestyle reflected and I began to see. I said, oh God, what have I become? I was so good. And I had to tolerate these things and all that. And then I couldn't contain myself. So time and again I would say, no, that is not right. What you are saying is a lie. You didn't tell the truth. Amongst the mandali, you know, in presence of Baba also so often it could come up like that. No, that's what you are saying is not right. You didn't mean that way, you said that. Because I am proud of my truthfulness. Mm-hmm. False. Yeah. So it went on for a couple of years. And one day, on the quiet, when I was with Baba, Baba says, I am very happy that you are very truthful. But do you realize what being truthful is? I said, well, I have been taught to be truthful from my childhood. Never to speak a lie, be truthful and all that. Being honest. He says, I'm proud of it. I like it. But do you realize what it is all about? You know, real honesty and truthfulness is such that when you exercise your truthfulness and your honesty, if you, by doing so, crush somebody, that smacks of dishonesty and untruthfulness. Your honesty and truthfulness should be such that it uplifts others. That is truthfulness, that's honesty. But instead of that, if it crushes somebody, if it exposes somebody, that's not being honest and truthful. It should be protective and uplifting for others. Now listen. He gives me a little story, he tells me. Now listen to this. From this you derive a lesson. See how loving and compassionate he is. How to live in the world, although we're not of it. So he tells me this story. After Muhammad, you know Lord Muhammad, Prophet Muhammad. Mm-hmm. He says, Muhammad had passed away, he had died. And after Muhammad passed away, there were quite a few Mandali people who were there, close to Muhammad. And I don't know whether you all have heard the name of Ali. Have you heard the name of Ali? Who was the right-hand man of Muhammad. He was sorely sad missing the Lord. His presence, physical presence. Well, after all, what can be done? When the body is there, body has to be dropped. So Muhammad has passed away. And one day during the time of Muhammad, what had happened was, he had, just as Baba has given us the prayer which we call O Parvardigar prayer, the universal prayer or master's prayers, whatever you call the title for it, he had also given the prayers which the Muslims still continue reciting. And in his time, there were the prayer halls created at the time. Just as you have your Meher centers, you know, all over the places. So there were, these centers were there where they would assemble and recite the prayers. So at one of the centers, Ali was sitting in a very pensive mood, not knowing now what else to be done. Muhammad has passed away. So he's sitting. And in front of the door, there were two parapets, mason parapets created, you see. You know, benches. Yeah. At that time, there was no such furniture as such. It would be just created by stones or bricks or something like that. So there were two benches there, mason benches. And he's sitting on one of them and in a very pensive mood. All of a sudden, to cut the story short, Baba says, he finds a man rushing towards him, out of breath, young man. He says, Ali, Ali, please save me. Save me, people are after me. So Ali gets up from his seat, opens the door of the center, and says, get inside. And he shuts the door. And, well, he takes a seat. He was sitting on this side, he's sitting there, on the opposite side now. And he's sitting quietly. People come running, a crowd is coming running. Knowing fully well, seeing Ali there, he says, Ali, did you see somebody running over here, that scoundrel? He says, not since I'm sitting here. Oh, taking him for granted, because he would speak the truth. He would be telling the truth. So they didn't want to waste any time, you know. So they just ran past by. This man who was inside, who was a real scoundrel, after, that's the reason why the crowd was running after him, overheard all this. And this little act of his, of Ali's, speaking the white lie, as you all call it, because he left the seat from this end, he went and sat there. And he says, not since I'm sitting here, I haven't seen anybody. My God, he has saved my life. So he surrendered to Ali and rectified his life in such a way that he lived the message of the Lord. So that is speaking the truth, that uplifts somebody, that helps somebody, see, to get out of the rut of one's life. Not by admonishing, but the way of life that one has to lead. So that's the lesson he taught me now. Now it's left for you all. I don't say speak untruth or be dishonest or anything. I'm just recalling the episodes that occurred. And from there you have to learn your own lessons. What do you think about it, Alan?
I think that was a good story to exemplify the point.
So that's how one has to be. And now another episode that comes to my mind from, you see, these are the episodes that teach us more than any, what you call, dissertations, philosophical dissertations or anything of the sort. To me it is so. I've drawn many lessons from such little episodes that occur in my life. Here is another good example. One of the greatest masters of the time, of the past, centuries ago. It revolves around his lifestyle. You know, in the early years, when there is a criminal, it is injunction from Islamic injunction that if you were to steal something and you are caught, the fingers are chopped off as a mark. That was the punishment given. Fingers are chopped off, the right hand finger. If you are caught again doing something, you see, which is undesirable and all that, arm is cut off. And so forth and so on. Such was the capital punishment. Apart from hanging, these are the little punishments that were being given to the culprits.
The little punishments?
Yeah, they were the little ones.
There wasn't much crime at that. I bet there wasn't too much crime.
No, not as we have nowadays. Right. Yeah, but there was crime. The world has never been bereft of crime. So there was crime. There were these little houses where they were imprisoned and they were put there and all that. So this man, there was a man there who was, his lifestyle was like that. He would commit one crime after another, you see. So much so that his whole arm was chopped off, you see. So he has been filling his term in prison and he's there. After 4 years, 6 years of imprisonment, all the terms have been over and all that. So he comes out. At that time, when a prisoner is set out of the prison, well, he says, get out from here. Your term is over now, you go. There were no such thing as pensions or this or that or any money given as a result. So naturally he has to be on his own. But knowing fully well that, well, if he were to go out and expose himself like that, people would recognize that he is a criminal without his arm is chopped off. So he covers his side, you see, very well and camouflages it and just goes as a man of the, on the street. And he goes. Now he has to eke out his living. How should he sustain unless and until he robs somebody else now? He was a thief. Every now and again he had to do that. So he's trying to find out ways and means now how to sustain myself now. What should I do again? And, without being caught naturally. So He's free now, he knows. So he does not know what to do. He goes to some place, you know, some shop and says, please, I've run short of money and give me some food or something. Hospitality demands that somebody comes to the door, you give him something and he fills his belly. So that's how it was. And he did that. But he is not happy with this. He has to have something to sustain himself. So the story takes us to him trying to find out a good place where he can lay his hands on and get something out of it. So he wanders and goes on the outskirts of the city there, an area, and comes across a mansion with a nice fence and a gate is there and all that. And he looks at the big building and all that. Something nice here. If I can go there and get it, I can have a substantial amount. But the gate is closed. So he goes and says, what is the mode of this? Have they locked the gate or something like that? So he just leans against it as if he's just relaxing in the afternoon. And the gate gives way. It was not locked. It was just shut like that. So there's no lock here. He sees that. On the quiet, he has to do that. And he knows the trick of the trade. And to his surprise, he finds that there is a room there. There's that, fine. So he keeps in mind, let us see, he wants to try his luck in the night, when in the darkness. And there, as usual, he comes back after his wanderings during the day, and comes there. And as usual, finds nobody on the street now. It's almost midnight. They all have gone to bed. There were the early sleepers at the time and early risers, not like present-day civilization, you see. So he again quietly leans against there and he sneaks inside the compound. As he goes there quietly, to his utter surprise, he had seen that side room there through which he wanted to enter. He thought that it was just a little room there, nobody would be living there. And sure enough, there was a door slightly open, it was not shut properly. So he goes there and he opens there. And to his utter surprise, there are racks all piled up. And so he tries to fumble there. And to his utter surprise, he finds them that, well, it's a storehouse of rugs, Persian rugs. He could feel the texture, you see. And said, my, they are all rolled up like that. It's full of them. If I can get about half a dozen of them on, I can carry them. So he is now all eager to grab as many as he could. But he has only one arm there. You know, he cannot. So what to do now? He selects a very thin piece of rug there like that, you see, and puts there, and then he's trying to get some more rugs piled up there. In the meantime, to his utter surprise and dismay, somebody is walking and climbing the steps of that room with a candle in his hand. And immediately he gets a shock and says, hey, who are you? He thinks that there is another one who has come to share in the booty. He says, no, I just come here to... You might need some help, isn't it? He says, what help? I don't need any help. I know you have come for things. He lays the candle there and he says, come on, let me help you, you know. So he says, no, I don't need any help. Mind you, I am the first one who has come. I must have the lion's share of the booty, you know. You don't try to do anything else. And he says, no, but I will be of help to you, you see. So he is helping him to pile the rugs and all that and made a huge bundle and tied it properly. He says, come on, I'll be there to help you out. So he is still skeptic about the whole issue. He says, who is he? Is he going to give me in, give my plot away or something like that? Who are you? He says, I just come. I don't know. I have nothing to do. I came here. You were fiddling with these things. I thought it is good to help you in your... whatever you are doing, I don't know what you are doing. So he says, okay, give it to me on my head. He says, no, don't you worry. You know it is difficult for you to carry it because your arm is not there. I can see that. So I will carry it for you. So he says, mind you, wherever you are carrying this, beware. You go ahead, I'll be following you, I'll be looking after it. My share is lion's share from this. That's mine. I have picked on all this. He says, yes, you have your lion's share, but I will go. Where do you want to go? He says, come on, let's get out of this. Let's sneak out of it. So they are going quietly in the night. The stranger who had come, he is having the whole load, you see, on his head and he's walking. Unfortunately, he tripped over some stone there. And he's an older person. He's an older person. And yet he's helping. And he cannot figure out who could the person be. Why does he want to help me and all that? So he stumbles and he falls down. With a thud, the whole thing fell off. That thief is frightened. And he says, hey, what are you doing there? See how people will hear about. Why did you do that? And he's just angry on him. And he says, I'm so sorry. You know, I stumbled over a stone here. And again, the balance is restored. They're walking. Go far away, you see. And there's a big culvert-like thing. And says, now we'll put this booty inside, underneath that culvert there, and just finish. In the meantime, there's this dawn there, breaking. And the man, old man says, well, is it all right? Is it safe? Are you sure it is safe over here? He says, yeah. Don't tell a word to anybody. And if you want it, you come here and we'll share it. He says, no, it's just there. I didn't have any work to do, so I tried to help you. I don't know what you are doing, you know. He is there. So he left, and this man is kept wondering. He says, what's the matter? Who could this person be who has done such a thing? He just wondered. But always remember one thing, that when thieving is done and a good amount of theft has taken place, the thief always wants to make sure whether there is a hubbub at the site of the crime. So always, he always has to return once. So in the morning at the time, everything is, again the traffic is resumed and all that. So he goes. And he's trying to find out whether there is any hubbub going on, any inquiries are there, people are shouting about the theft that has taken place, or anything. Because he had rummaged everything in that storeroom. So there is nothing. Stillness. There's nothing. No sign of it. What's the matter? So he does not know what to do. Where is he? Whose house is this? So he goes to a nearby place. And he says, by the way, whose mansion is that? You know that mansion there with a great big gate and all that? The thief is asking, as if he knows nothing about the whole thing. And he did not know, of course. He says, don't you know whose mansion is that? No, I don't know. I'm a stranger over here, you know. Because she tries to cover his, barren shoulder over there. And he's like a gentry. He says, I don't know, I'm just a stranger over here. Whose mansion is that? It's a nice mansion. He says, well, go inside. How can I go? How can I enter inside anybody's mansion? He says, no, there are people around there. Go inside. And sure enough, he goes inside. He comes back to the gate. The gate is again shut. He opens it and goes inside now boldly because the man has told him to go inside. So he goes there and he hears some noises are created. Some debates are there. Some people are talking and all that. Where is the sound coming? So he goes in the direction of the sound. And sure enough, there's a huge hall of people seated there. And there is one venerable person sitting on the seat over there. And he enters, just not knowing where he is, what is it. And he enters, and he sees a person seated there. So the person gets up from the seat, that old man, and says, my friend, you have come again, come inside, welcome, come. And he is taken by surprise. He recognizes him as the same old man who had come in the night, who is a venerable person over here. He says, yeah, can I be of any help to you now? You want some help? He says, yes, I want help from you. And he openly declares who he is. And before the public, he says, the laws of the land have never cured me. In spite of all this that is there, you can see it. I am a criminal. My vocation is thieving. And a gesture from this man, venerable person, last night, and now what I see, has cured me of all my ills. I want your help. I want to surrender to you. So that's how it is. Yeah. So these are the things, where honesty is, and what thieving is, and abating a thief, and all this has no meaning, you see. Provided the intention and the motive for doing such things are straight, in proper direction. Yeah. This was from the life of Bayazid. Yeah, of Bistam, the great perfect master. He did not know. So a thief has been converted just by a little action of abating the exploits of the thief. Abating the thief's exploits. Yeah. So it's all relative. Everything depends upon your own motive. How you want to live your life. What's within you.